Hello, 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 everyone. Welcome to episode number 8 of Unformidable, where we take a look back at the wild and wacky and the less heralded myths that make up our beloved franchise's quirky, bizarre tapestry. As I like to say, every player who plays for the Mets is in their own way unformidable. And that tapestry is certainly feeling tattered and dirty today. These days, that's for sure. It's definitely a dark, dark time in Mets world. But, you know, that's pretty standard, isn't it? You know, people see me with my hat and they're like, I don't know how you root for that team. And I'm like, what, like, you think this is just today? Come on. This is, I've been dealing with this since 1979. So, you know, shut up. But I thought I'd actually go against type a bit, and try to be slightly positive. As I mentioned last week, I've been trying to hit on some players that have been suggested to me online and in the comments on the podcast. So, again, this one was, I thought was a tad prominent. Then again, I'm starting to think anything like pre-2000 probably shouldn't be considered prominent. I mean, probably aren't that many people much older than me listening to podcasts anyway, right? So this is another suggestion that I got for someone to cover who I think was a very beloved Met in his time and still conjures up warm memories for Met fans. I thought I'd go a little positive and look at a nice player from a, you know, cite some successful years in Mets history, you know, and remember that as bad as this year is looking right now, things can turn around. And we're going to look at a player from the 73, you gotta believe, Mets and other solid years, one Felix Mian. Felix Mian, who is known as Kitten, or in his homeland of Puerto Rico, El Gatito, which eventually was, adapted to the English moniker, The Cat, I assume for Felix the Cat. Again, for all you young listeners out there, a less successful, less commonly known these days cartoon cat. Sorry if you already know that. But Felix was born in El Cerro de Carvalho, Puerto Rico, in 1943, third of 11 children, grew up quite poor, taking jobs as a young boy, shining shoes, picking grass to assist his family, and of course playing a lot of baseball. After a stint in the U.S. Army from 1960 to 1962, Mian continued trying to chase that baseball dream and was signed by a scout for the Kansas City Athletics out of Puerto Rico in 1964, where he was spotted playing first base, believe it or not. But he was quickly thereafter in the minors, switched to the position that would come to define him, second base, where, you know, Mian obviously, if you don't know him at all, was very much known as a defensive wizard and, you know, the quintessential slap hitting, you know, probably outdated in today's game, middle infielder, of course, was known more than it, also known for his prominent, the prominent choking up on the bat that he did. Anyway, after a year in the Athletics system, Mian was drafted by the then Milwaukee Braves in November of that offseason, where he worked his way up through the minor league system. And he always apparently gave great credit to one of his minor league managers, Hub Kittle, for being the one to encourage him to begin choking up on the bat. He soon became a perennial 300 hitter in the minors and worked his way up to join the Braves. Last time I'll use that name, but the town kind of forced me into it. But he joined the team in 1966 in the club's first season in Atlanta. Upon arriving in Atlanta, apparently one of the first people to greet Mian and welcome him to the team was one you may have heard of, a Mr. Henry Aaron, who would eventually become Mian's roommate during his years with Atlanta, which I didn't know and I thought was very cool. Anyway, with the Braves, he was up and down in the minors to the majors in 66 and 67, but came up to stay in 1968 when he hit 289, which, believe it or not, was 11th in the league in that notorious year of the pitcher that was 1968. And, you know, and Gibson with his 1.12 ERA, I guess 289 looks pretty impressive all of a sudden. Then he really established himself that year, and from 1969 to 1972 was a mainstay in Atlanta, winning two Gold Gloves, 69 and 72. 69 was probably his best season as a major leaguer, although he had some really nice years with the Mets that we'll discuss. But he hit his career high 6 home runs, 57 RBIs in 1969, 14 of 17 on stolen bases. And as mentioned, he was always known for his smooth defense and his great range. And he led National League second baseman with 373 putouts and 444 assists in 1969. So he was a leader, or, you know, a prominent player on the 1969 Atlanta team that was favored to advance to the World Series in 1969. And Mion did his part in the first ever National League Championship Series, hitting 333, but it was not enough as the Braves fell to a certain team of destiny in the 1969 NLCS. Anyway, he continued to be a solid member of Atlanta, but after the 1972 season, the franchise felt they badly needed pitching, so they packaged Felix the Cat and George Stone for Gary Gentry and Danny Frisella, and Felix fulfilled his manifest destiny and became a New York Met.
Beyonce, Ariana Grande, and Drake are talked about ad nauseum as celebrities, but there's one thing that's rarely discussed, their music.
On Switched on Pop, we go deep into the sounds of pop music to explain what it means, how it's made, and why it's so effective.
We talk with some of today's greatest artists, producers, and journalists to decode the musical logic behind our modern soundtrack and understand its role in our culture.
Switched on Pop will reveal for you how a secretive Swedish producer is behind many of the top 10 hits of the past 20 years.
And we'll uncover the ways that songwriters embed their political activism into today's most popular tracks.
We'll show you the surprising musical similarities between Cardi B and Taylor Swift.
And we'll even dive into the classical past to hear how the Jonas Brothers mirror Mozart's youthful party days.
I'm songwriter Charlie Harding.
And I'm musicologist Nate Sloan.
Join us on a journey through the world of popular music by subscribing to Switched on Pop on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite podcast app to get new episodes every Tuesday.
I'm Todd Vanderwerf, the host of Primetime, a new show from Vox.com. This season, we're tackling the American presidency on TV. Stories that capture the way television affects and reflects politics and culture. We'll take a look at fictional presidents who've changed the way we think about the real Oval Office.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States.
Good morning, everyone. Please, take your seats.
And how real presidents use TV to further their own goals.
What did you come here to plug?
Have you heard of the Affordable Care Act?
From the first TV president.
People have got to know whether or not their president's a crook. Well, I'm not a crook.
To arguably the last.
We are fighting the fake news. It's fake, phony, fake.
Primetime, from the Vox Media Podcast Network and Vox.com. Listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
So, Felix Mion came to the a Met franchise desperate to recapture that 1969 magic. And, of course, early in the 1973 season, it looked like that just wasn't going to happen. But this second base glove wizard, proved to be a really nice addition right off the bat. Mion looks like a rock in the middle of the infield. And had a great season in 73. Was the National League Player of the Week in mid-June one week with a batting average of .533. And, of course, those, you gotta believe, Mets won 24 of their last 33. And their paltry 82 wins squeaked them into the top spot of the National League East. Ashley Geese this year isn't quite as excellent as everyone thought it might be. The Phillies and the Braves going as they are, I don't know if 82 is quite going to do it, but, you know, maybe you got to believe, hard as that is right now. But back to Felix the Cat. Mian led that team, that 73 team, in a host of categories. Games played, which he did often. Run scored, 82. 185 hits, which at that point in time was a Met season record. And so forth. By the end of that season, he was also the toughest player to strike out in the National League. 22 strikeouts in 638 at bats, which is kind of insane. And now, granted, it's a different baseball world. You know, this is still a world where Phil Rizzuto could win a fucking MVP. But Mian, with his three homers, 37 RBIs, and 685 OPS, was voted that 73 team's most valuable player by New York sports writers, and they weren't the only ones. He actually was 16th in the NL MVP voting that year, although the national writers recognized the relative valuability of Tom Seaver more. He was 8th that year, any year that Pete Rose won the MVP. Mian picked up enough votes to place 16th. Mian's Mets would beat Pete Rose where it counted, in the NLCS, just like Buddy Harrelson beat Pete Rose literally in that series. Actually, I don't really remember the outcome of that brawl. I have an odd feeling, but might not have been able to take Pete. I'll have to YouTube that later. Mian hit 316 in that NLCS to send the Mets to the World Series. Not by himself, but you know what I mean. However, the World Series didn't go as well for Felix. He made a really crucial error in Game 1 of the World Series in the third inning on a relatively routine ground ball by Burt Campanaris that led to both Oakland runs scoring in that inning and what turned into a 2-1 loss for the Mets. The lesson, as always, if you're going to make a brutal error in the World Series, do it early in the series. Everyone forgets. Just ask Tim Tuffle. Because unlike a lot of people who've made those crucial World Series errors, I didn't even, maybe that's virtue of my age, but I didn't really know or remember that about Felix Mian. And again, he seems very well and warmly remembered. The team wouldn't make the playoffs again during Mian's Met tenure, but again, he continued to be quite the rock at second base. He was the first Met to ever play in all 162 games in 1975, a record that wouldn't be matched until John Olerud did it in 1999. And you can only John Olerud could have broken that record in 1999 because we played 163 that year. Wonder what game he sat out, lazy bastard. Now, I love John Olerud so much. But perhaps it's nice that that he and Felix are actually side by side in the record book in that one. Mian set a lot of records that year that since have fallen since 75. But at the time, they were Met team records of 676 at bats, 191 hits, and 37 doubles. And while I hate to hell that this is going to be the second straight podcast that I mention the name Joe Torre, one of the more famous stories I think involving Felix Mian is that on July 21st, 1975, against the Houston Astros, Mian went 4 for 4. Well, he had 4 singles. I don't know if he had more than 4 at bats. And Torre immediately followed with 4 double play groundouts, setting a National League record for double plays in a game. And and that graciousness that made him so beloved, and as a Yankee manager, and makes me hate him. Torre did say afterwards that he'd like to thank Felix Mian for making all of it possible. Well played, Joe Torre. Anyway, it looked like Mian would really be a rock for the Met franchise, I think, for some time to come. Unfortunately, his major league career ended incredibly abruptly on August 12th, 1977. In a game I learned in researching the pod, he didn't even start. He actually came on as a defensive replacement in the sixth inning of the second game of a doubleheader. And when Ed Ott tried to break up a double play very roughly on a Mario Mendoza ground ball. I wonder if he was batting under 200 at the time. Certainly hope so. But anyway, Ed Ott, I guess, knocked down Mion very abruptly, and he fell to the ground, you know, and where I saw described as like an NFL linebacker tackle. I'm just picturing fucking Chase Utley. I don't know Ed Ott. Let's just picture Chase Utley in our day and age. But Mion was so incensed, he came up and he punched Ott with the ball still in his fist. And instead of a retaliatory punch, Ott pretty much body slammed Mion into the ground, inciting a bench clearing brawl. Mion wound up being carried out in a stretcher. The slight 170-pound second baseman tackled by the linebacker-sized Ed Ott, and Mion wound up with a broken clavicle and dislocated shoulder. He had to be carried off the field on a stretcher, and Ott was fined $250 for that. So, kind of more than Chase Utley got, right? In comparison. So apparently the injuries were too much for Mion to return to Major League Baseball. However, he did make a kind of a secondary career playing in Japan. He played out there for 3 years, I think, at least, and seemed to really enjoy his time there. For his Major League career, Mion, I think one of the most astounding numbers I saw is that he had 6,325 plate appearances, and he struck out 242 times. So for 4 of his 12 seasons, he was statistically the toughest batter to strike out in the National League, and he'll always be remembered, I think, as an amazing glove-first second baseman with that incredibly exaggerated, choked-up stance on the bat, just like a quintessential slap-hitting middle infielder, the likes of which we'll probably never get to see and enjoy and appreciate again unless baseball makes another precipitous change in style. I've always also... I'd try to do some pop culture research, not as interesting as Bernard Gilkey in Men in Black, but I always believed Mion was probably or at least I had read in several places that he was the inspiration for the Chico Escuela character that Garrett Morris did on SNL. I tried to research that, and I've found conflicting reports as to whether it was Felix Mion or Pepe Mangual, which... You know, perhaps those were just the two Latino players on the Mets at that time, and that's why people are making those assumptions, and maybe we shouldn't talk about this anymore. I couldn't find out a ton about Mion post-career. I do know he has made appearances for the Mets. He also made appearances for Major League Baseball internationally as an instructor. In the 80s, he worked for the Mets in Port St. Lucie in spring training, and also as a Latin American coordinator in their minor league system. But mostly just that he lives in Puerto Rico and Florida. But regardless of whether he inspired any beloved variety show sketch icons, and even though that 73 team didn't quite go all the way, El Gatito, Felix the Cat, just a beloved, wonderful figure in the Mets tapestry, and it was a pleasure to revisit his career a bit and share it with you all. Thank you all, as always, for listening to Unformettable. Please visit AmazonAvenue.com for all kinds of Mets-related content. Follow AA on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, where you can find this, all of our amazing podcasts. If you do subscribe, please leave a review. It's very helpful. Please send us your suggestions for this and other podcasts. For players you might want to see covered, and any feedback is appreciated. Original music by Bunga. I'm on Twitter at WolfRR, WOLFF. Please don't forget the second F, RR. And the show is on Twitter at Unformettable. Thank you, and as always, let's go